Hey everyone at ASAP Now, and thanks again for joining us here at ASAP Nowcast, the podcast for ASAP Now. Now, this is the August episode, and August means back to school, and it also means that Scientific Assembly is right around the corner. So usually we cover mostly clinical or practice content here on the podcast, but this month I actually wanted to cover an article in the magazine that was really more of a work-life discussion. And that article is called Oh Baby, and it, as you can imagine, covers baby-related issues, specifically childcare. Now, the article is by Dr. Duncan Grossman, Dr. Sue, and Dr. Hamowitz, and I thought there was a lot of really good commentary in there when EM physicians, who are notoriously, let's call it work hard, play hard sort of attitudes, it covered a lot of content for us that talks about how to balance in your life of shift work, which can be demanding, but then also, again, attracts a personality that really likes to emphasize the life part of work-life balance. Now, I preface that because I know that this content will be applicable to some of our listeners, but not perhaps all. So if you aren't interested in this month's podcast, we take no offense, but there is plenty more in the magazine for all comers. There's an article about the ice pack test for myasthenia gravis, which I found quite interesting, by Sam Cray and Dr. Austin Bennett. There is the annual physician compensation report, which is very well read and commented on usually every year. Our resident editor, Dr. Lee, has a great piece on private equity in healthcare and the impact on early career EM physicians. And like I mentioned, ASAP Scientific Assembly is just around the corner. So our president-elect preview and updates on the ASAP Annual Conference 2024 are all content for you to check out in advance of Vegas. So with that, let's jump right in. Like I mentioned, the article I wanted to cover this month was Oh Baby by Duncan Grossman, Tim Sue, and Michelle Hamowitz, who are all ER physicians. Now, point of personal privilege, I have a 3-month-old and a 24-month-old, so babies are very much on my mind as a female emergency medicine physician. And I'll also preface this that my personal slant is not only that of a mother of 2 very young children, but also as someone who's actually not married to another physician, which I think just adds complexity. And the point of, I think, covering this article is to discuss some of the life challenges that we can have as emergency physicians in childcare and all kind of baby-related topics. So Dr. Grossman, Sue, and Hamowitz, I think, do a really great job of discussing childcare, specifically what are some of the options for childcare. Now, before we get into that, I think there is a couple ways to frame this. There is childcare, which is preschool, and I don't mean preschool, but before children are school age. I think that there is childcare after school, which might be a little bit different because it usually involves getting kids to activities, obviously to school, preparation, et cetera. And you see a lot of natural evolution in childcare as kids grow up. There's, of course, considerations on family, if you have extended family helping. There's obviously considerations as well. If you are the ER physician and your spouse is also a shift worker, or if your spouse is also in medicine, particularly a specialty that may take call, or if your spouse is someone who works 9-to-5, remote, in offices, travel, et cetera. So lots of complexity here. But I think it's worth noting, which Dr. Grossman, Sue, and Hamowitz do, that EM physicians have kind of unique challenges in childcare because of the uniqueness of our schedules. Specifically, we work nights, we work weekends, we work holidays, we may take call, we may be married to people that take call. And that doesn't always blend well with certain childcare options that are catered towards the 9-to-5 worker. So ER doctors, I think, are also very much in the attitude of work hard, play hard. We like shift work because you come on and then you come off and you're really off. And that blends really nicely for a lot of family dynamics, specifically if you want to travel, if you want to have the random Tuesday off to take your kiddo to the dentist, if there's a school event that you want to try to make. All of these actually blend quite well in terms of a shift schedule for getting to some of those events that are otherwise difficult in a 9-to-5 model. And I also think ER doctors are notoriously good at triage. And we talk about work-life balance. I actually hate calling it balance because the truth is that none of us are balanced, but we all prioritize and we all triage. And specifically, beyond triage, ER doctors are also highly resourceful. So we understand resources in the hospital, whether that's consulting or resources literally like other staff or equipment, procedures, etc. But we also understand resources in life, which I think is about outsourcing. And I don't think any of us want to feel like we are outsourcing our children, but I do think that we realistically need, especially in dual working families, but single working families as well, a little bit of extra help. Now, so when we start to talk about childcare, I think there's some infrastructure things to talk about beyond what the hours are, what contracts are, et cetera, just payment itself. So payroll and payrolling your childcare options, especially if you have an in-home option, is something that is discussed a lot because, truth be told, ER doctors are fairly high earners. We sometimes have complicated tax structures given whether we are 1099, W-2, blended, etc. And so to add into that complexity, make sure that you are discussing payroll, payroll taxes, payroll systems with any in-home childcare options who are considered employees of the household. How you blend that with, say, your LLC or something else like that is up to you, but have that consideration so that you can talk to the appropriate accountants or tax specialists when it comes to time. Now, Drs. Grossman, Sue, and Hamowitz do a good job, I think, outlining what are the options with childcare, specifically nanny, au pair, daycare, night nanny or doulas, and of course, family. And then I think they do a really good job talking about how to augment your shift life to help with some of the challenges of each of those options. So to detail those just a little bit more, they talk about nannies, which is probably traditionally what a lot of people think about, but it's someone who is in home, who's actually usually a household employee, especially if they're full-time and thus subject to the same employee benefits that you would expect, things like overtime, and things like benefits potentially, and of course, taxes and tax withholdings. So with nannies, they traditionally come to your house. They are often 9-to-5. However, you can find the right person that's willing to do holidays, nights, etc., and may want to discuss things like overtime or call, again, if that's something that works into you or your partner's careers. And nannies are, very, very common. They're traditionally hourly. However, salaries can be offered as well. And they may have other benefits, things like they might have a car that the family provides to allow them to drive around the child, but also perhaps during their personal time, lots and lots of different contracts that you can have. In addition to that, there's a lot of different ways that you can find a nanny. One of them is, what we think of a lot, like Facebook groups, care.com. So basically you are the one screening, finding, doing background checks, pulling, driver's records if they're going to be driving, etc. And there's also nanny agencies where you pay an agency who helps place a nanny, and there's usually a fee or a service charge associated with that. Now, nannies are great. They can be extremely flexible. They can be really an extension of you, but it, I think, relies on who fits well with you and who fits well with your children. But very common arrangement for ER doctors. Au pairs are also very common for not only ER doctors, but also other medical professionals. Specifically, I hear about this a lot in friends who are either in specialties that take call or have a spouse who's in a specialty that takes call or has to travel. So au pairs are usually from another country. Actually, I say always from another country. They're young, and this is a very, very regulated industry. There are restrictions on what they can and can't do. There are restrictions on how much they can work. There are restrictions on what you must provide. And without getting into a lot of the detail, they are a young foreigner usually that wants to come to the US and experience the culture for approximately 1 to 2 years. You usually sign on with them for a year with the option to renew for a second year, but they live in your home and it's a cultural connection. So they live in your home. They obviously help with children within the parameters of the number of hours and the roles that they can have, but they also have a life. So, you know, you might find that, you know, these 19, 20, 21, 18 year olds are dating while they're here. They'll have social lives, and that's part of what you invite with an au pair. Now, some of the benefits, of course, are that you have usually much more flexible schedules, in part because they're living with you. But also, there's the downside that there is someone living in your home, which can be difficult with our schedules. For example, if you work a night shift and you want to sleep during the day, you know, if you have children in the house, of course, there's going to be a little bit more noise. But then now on top of it, you're adding an additional adult. Same for, you know, depending on the living arrangements you have, it might start to feel a little cramped or invasive. So pros and cons for au pair, but commonly used, I think, in particular with call schedules because of that inherent flexibility with schedule and the fact that they're living in your home. So if you get called out at, you know, 3 o'clock and your spouse is, let's say, taking surgery call, then you have someone there without needing to worry about a commute. Now, daycare is also a very, very common form of childcare. And that is, as you would expect, you take your child to a facility, and, you know, they are cared for within certain hours. Daycares tend to be fairly regular hours. They do have extended care, but sometimes that extended care does not extend long enough to cover even early mornings or later evenings. They almost never cover overnight. I've never seen an overnight daycare. And there's also different arrangements with daycares, everything from, you know, chains and facilities, as you would commonly think. But a lot of people have in-home daycares where they'll also have, let's say, 5 to 10 kids in the home with appropriate care, hosted by usually one of the families of either one of the children or the staff or owner. Now, daycares have the pro of providing socialization for children. They have the pro that it is a business, so the hours tend to be very reliable. However, remember that if your child gets sick, that you will usually need to keep your children at home. And in daycare, it's also common for children to be sick by nature of the socialization versus a nanny or au pair. It depends on the arrangement you have with that nanny or au pair, but usually they'll still help with the child with childcare, even if the child is sick. So what I see a lot is with daycare, people like the regularity, but the sickness factor, aka the fact that your child will get sick and that they have to stay home when they're sick and they might get the rest of the household sick, that tends to bring in some variability and needs for backup that can be frustrating. Now, I really loved that the doctors brought on and mentioned night nanny and doula. And the reason I really love that is because I don't think we talk about that as much. Now, night nannies and doulas are childcare at night. These are really common, especially immediately postpartum or in the first couple months of a baby's life, because there is a lot of waking up in the middle of the night, and that can be taxing on both parents, not just a parent who you know, who is the birthing parent, or of course for adoptive parents or other arrangements. I'm not trying to exclude those, but the concept is someone comes to your home in the night and tends to the baby at night. This includes feeding, diapering, burping, holding, helping sleep train potentially. And the doula part of it is that some have approaches that are more holistic. So not only are they providing childcare, but especially with families who are on their first child, they're really helping to educate the parents on how to sleep train. What is normal newborn sleeping? And then, of course, helping in recovery, if applicable, to the birthing parent. There is a type of doula that's very common in Asian cultures, actually. They're called postpartum doulas. Another term in Mandarin or Cantonese, but the concept is actually not only are they taking care of the child, but they're also taking care of the mother or the birthing parent and helping with everything from household tax to food, and of course to the baby, so that the mother can recover post-birth. So something that I really love seeing mentioned, because it's not as common or prolific, I think, but it can add a lot of benefit, and it can actually layer on to some of these other options like nanny, au pair, or daycare. Now, lastly, I think it's worth mentioning, of course, family. So family are wonderful. You know they love your children. You know that, you know, not only are they providing childcare, but they're providing bonding and relationship that hopefully the child will have for a very, very long time. So I mention this because there's different arrangements with, you know, grandparents, in-laws, you know, sisters, brothers, uncles, cousins, etc. Of course, there are going to be relationship dynamics because of that. But I think it's worth mentioning because for a lot of people, extended family can be at least backup care, if nothing else, which is, you know, beneficial. And I think is a consideration as ER doctors are looking for jobs in particular, because we're very location centric, I think, sometimes. But where is your extended family? Do you have children? Do they help with childcare? If you're near extended family, could that be a benefit if you're thinking about having children and so on? Now, beyond just childcare, which I think we've covered the major buckets of, Dr. Grossman, Dr. Sue, and Dr. Hamowitz also talked about shift adjustments. And I will preface this that I did not realize how important a supportive group can be when it comes to child rearing and how to balance your work life and shifts with what you might want to be doing at home. And I think that goes down to things like how supportive is your group for some of these scheduling abilities, knowing that, you know, it promotes longevity of, you know, the physicians, it promotes better wellness of the physicians. And some of the shift adjustments mentioned were things like if you set a rigid schedule, i.e. if you work every Tuesday, Thursday, that tends to layer really nicely with let's say someone who wants to be a part-time nanny, but wants to work Monday, Wednesday, Friday. The sporadic tends to be a little bit harder for people to arrange around. They mentioned very specifically nocturnus schedules, which are interesting, especially for school-age children, because the physician actually works when the kids are usually sleeping. They come home, help get the kiddos ready for school, and then while the kids are at school, they can sleep and catch up like they would normally. On top of that, nocturnus schedules tend to be a lot more flexible in terms of the physician being able to choose schedules or set a rigid schedule. They also mentioned bolus shifts, which is this concept of you're on for a while and then you're off for a while. So classically hospitalists have this of, you know, seven off, seven on, but then has the same benefit of being rigid. You could perhaps find someone who likes that, you know, 7 day on, 7 day off. You can layer it perhaps with your partner or an extended family, depending on what their work situation is. And then, of course, they mentioned remote work, which tends to be a little less common in emergency medicine and classic shift work, but is becoming more common, I think, as telemedicine is starting to take more foot. And then also as ER doctors tend to subset out into other career endeavors. For me specifically, I do informatics, which actually can be heavily remote, which has helped wonderfully both times that I had babies. I know also people will go into administration as well, which has that same remote work benefit. Some people will do consulting, some people will do what, you know, is bucketed as side gigs, but, you know, anything from like expert witness to writing, etc., which can just help blend what your career looks like in terms of what needs you to be physically somewhere versus what needs you to just be present in terms of your brain, which you can layer in between naps or other things going on with kids. And then lastly is reduced hours, which I think needs no further explanation, But, you know, an FTE is an artificial construct. There is no reason that your life is blended into a whole FTE. You can go down to 0.7, 0.8. You can go from, you know, let's say 140 hours a month to 120. And that might just be the wiggle room and flexibility you need to not only have wellness, but, you know, do the things for your family that you think are important into and important to prioritize. Now, those are the major buckets as described by the doctors. And again, I love that because I wish I had read that article before I had kids, and it would have helped me a lot as, you know, I entered the world of overwhelming options for childcare, even for physicians. I think it is very worth mentioning that, again, very individual to your family, very individual to your values, very individual to your relation, your support system. And while there is almost too much information out there, there are a lot of like-minded people that you can find, everything from, you know, Facebook groups like Physician Moms Group to EM Docs to, you know, Dr. Milk, all different just communities that are online that can help you address a lot of these problems that can feel isolating when you're in it. But that, you know, you can find a lot of support and great advice actually in just hearing what other people do who are in similar shoes as you. So I encourage you to reach out into some of those communities, explore if this is something that has been challenging to you. Now, I wouldn't feel right without at least mentioning some of the other considerations as an ER doctor with children. And again, my bias is as a female who was pregnant twice with children, who also opted to breastfeed after. But I think there are very real challenges with both those states, pregnant state and also breastfeeding state, as a ER doctor. And this is not meant to be exclusionary for people who choose to not breastfeed, or adoptive parents or surrogate parents or otherwise. So I think some of the considerations I wanted to bring up is breastfeeding. There is a lot of female physician support on how to make pumping and, you know, breastfeeding viable as you're working shifts. I mentioned Dr. Milk as a Facebook group that is a lot of physicians who are lactating or interested in lactation, because, you know, there are challenges to finding time to pump. Some people actually opt, depending on their specialty and their setup, to have a partner or childcare provider bring the baby to work so that they can just nurse directly. There are a lot of different configurations at work in terms of lactation rooms, whether they're in the actual department, whether they are outside of the department, whether there's only one for the whole hospital, how private they are, how quiet they are, etc. And I think these considerations are worth addressing and looking into and asking your hospital about, because if you're going to pump or bring the baby to work, I think you need to understand if you're someone who can work while pumping, like literally you have no problem running around seeing patients, because that can make things like wearable pumps an excellent solution for you. If you're someone who maybe wants to document while pumping, in which case you'll find that you may run your shift a little bit differently. This was something I like to do, but I would see a lot of patients right before I had to pump, so I could disappear for, you know, 30 minutes, 40 minutes to pump while I documented, put in orders, talk to consultants, etc. But that took me out of needing to be physically running around. And there's plenty of people who I think need peace and quiet and no stress while appropriately, you know, lactating and pumping. And so there's nothing wrong with that. But then, you know, it's about how do you set the expectations and the setup at work so that you can successfully have peace and quiet and perhaps not document, not work. Maybe you need to make sure that you are at a place that has backup coverage in the department so that you can take the time that you need. And remember that there are rules, federal regulations, discussing what are pump accommodations. I think also, before I had kids, I was always someone that didn't eat on shift. It was, you know, I actually thought I worked faster hungry. And when I got pregnant, and certainly when I was breastfeeding, I found that you can't go all shift without eating. And so for me, that was a change in how I ran my shifts, that I needed a little bit of a break at least, to at least have a snack, make sure I drank tons of water, and as a result, also had to go to the bathroom more than I used to have to as well. In addition to, you know, just the pump time. And for me, what actually worked out really well was no longer stacking shifts. So doing strings of shifts were really hard on me, but splitting them up made it a lot easy. So I had recovery time from not only shift, but also the extra demands that come with trying to layer in breastfeeding on shift. I think lastly is a supplies discussion. And I don't mean milk supply, but the actual supply. I mentioned pumps. Obviously, you need something to extract milk. But I think also there is the discussion of how do you clean things. If you're like me, you probably don't feel like emergency departments are the cleanest. And so, you know, what is the availability of sinks? What is the availability of a fridge if you're just going to refrigerate your pump parts in between pumps? How do you feel about using some of the wipes instead of doing a full, you know, sink clean just because of timeliness and ease of drying? So I think a lot of considerations, again, a lot of support out there, probably even within your group, with other, you know, physicians who have done it, and of course, online communities. Now, with pregnancy, I think this one is also very worth mentioning. Pregnancy is a physically demanding state, and I think our jobs are actually fairly physically demanding. And in addition to that, beyond the shift work and the complications that can happen from the stress of that, the sleep disruptions, the hydration needs that you have during pregnancy and the caloric needs you have during pregnancy, I think we have a couple unique exposures. One is radiation. So that one is fairly obvious, but of course, you know, remember to lead, remember to, you know, come out of the room if you're not leaded when there's x-rays going off, because most of us live in job scenarios where there is, you know, in-room x-ray, so you're getting exposed to that. But also some unique exposures. I think in particular, this one came up while I was breastfeeding, but a cancer patient came in with, I believe it was cisplatin or a newer version of that, that is highly toxic by skin exposure. And this becomes more of a consideration even when you're either pregnant or lactating. And so I think it just makes an additional layer of something for you to watch out for, because you're not only protecting yourself, but also protecting your baby at home. Similarly, I think infection is something we're very well accustomed to the concept of bringing home, especially in this like post-COVID or COVID era. But in addition, you know, there's C. diff, there's TB, a lot of other infections that may not be as top of mind, but become more top of mind, especially when you are either breastfeeding or pregnant or just have small children at home. Now, I think lastly, I wanted to mention leave. So it is fairly unusual to have maternity leave, especially paid maternity leave nowadays in healthcare. I think thankfully that seems to be augmenting itself because I'm seeing more and more job offerings of maternity leave. I think it's even more rare to have paternity leave, but again, I'm very heartened to hear that there's more and more parental leave offered in emergency medicine that is paid. But this is something that you should think about when you're looking for jobs, and something you should ask about when you are at a job, if this is a phase of life that you're thinking of entering. Similarly, if you are interested in breastfeeding, discussing pumping accommodations, maybe even spearheading pumping accommodations at your institution can be something to explore. Now, lastly, I think children and work-life balance are tough. And childcare and reliability in childcare is tough, especially with our schedules. And I think you layer on top of that an inherent guilt and a worry that you may be outsourcing your kids. But here's the punchline. Lots and lots and lots of people find a way to balance it and find a way to make it work. So you are not alone. There are many, many, many options. One of, I think, the good news of our career is that we tend to be highly, not only resourceful, but also have fairly good resources in life for childcare. But remember that just like we're excellent at triaging at work, remember to triage your life. There are things that we should always prioritize: family, relationships, etc. There are things that are less important. And I think you guys know as well as I do that I have never seen a patient at the end of their life say, wow, I wish I worked more. So you will figure it out. Support helps. don't forget to triage and prioritize the things that are most important in not only your career, really, but I think your life, because your career is just a subset of your life. And like that, always remember that what we do matters. So that's it for us this month on the August episode of ASAP Nowcast. Thanks again for indulging me on a pretty robust discussion of all things baby and children, but I hope it was interesting, especially to a lot of the earlier career physicians, because not only are we balancing the earlier, maybe mid-career challenges, but you know, we're also balancing young children and what that means for family and transitions and what that means for not only balancing but triaging your life. So thanks again for joining us. And as always, if there is something you would like to hear on the podcast, feel free to tweet us at ASAPNow or tweet me directly at Amy Faith Ho. We always want to come up with content that keeps you tuning in and interested. And we want to, again, thank you for joining us again on this month's podcast.